Right.
What?
He's doing
that. Was my impression of Cat from Red Dwarf. Not to be confused with my impression of Urwolf flying.
That sounds more like R2-D2 getting hit with something.
No, 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 no. That would be... Wow!
Or, yeah. No, maybe not.
It did sound like R2-D2 having a bad day, didn't it? you know what I want? A Star Wars story. R2-D2, a Star Wars story. And it's all six of the original, the prequels and the original movies from R2's point of view. And I just get the impression it would be R2 looking directly at camera like Jim from The Office every 5 minutes, just going, what the actual f***? I'd watch that. I'd pay for that. I would watch that for 2 hours.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert. All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers. Now start acting like it.
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Two True Freaks Deep Space Nine podcast. I am J. David Weider, the producer.
Woo!
Yay!
I'm doing the hard work so Paul doesn't have to.
We've overthrown our oppressor.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
Hey, I've stepped up to executive producer. You're not out of the hot water yet.
Not yet.
Man. In fact, you may have gone from, you know, just to keep going with the cooking analogies, you may have gone from the frying pan to the fire. Because now you have two people to bust your chops.
Was the voices you're hearing with me are Mr. I'm going to go in reverse order. Mr. Andrew Leyland.
There, I get the and. That's contractual.
Oh. And Andrew Leyland. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and Andy is very big on his contract.
No, it's singular.
Just so you're aware, Dave.
Sorry, Manette. That's Rick.
And Andy has a copy of his contract sitting on the desk as we record, and anytime we violate a clause, he starts reading it.
This highlighted then, portion right here.
And then he calls his lawyer to complain, but luckily that's me anyway, so I just humor him.
I can just see him on the phone to me, just looking at his animals and just putting his ring around his temple, like, hey, whatever's going on. Yeah, Andy, I'll sell that for you.
I turn into one of those, like, stereotypical, you know, Hollywood guys. Yeah, baby, whatever you need, I'm going to get it for you. And then as soon as we hang up, I just go back to whatever I was doing.
Then Ron Howard comes on saying, Paul had no intention of sorting that out for Andy.
That's pretty much it.
Well, the Paul in this question is Mr. Paul Spataro. Yeah.
Hello, everybody. Andy is still waiting for his jetpack, by the way.
We're working on it. We're working on that. Jetpacks came up the other night, oddly enough. And Andy. They go together.
They go together like ram-a-lam-a-dam-a-dam-a-dam-a-la-bing-a-bong.
And we also have the strangely quiet for the moment Dr. Bill Robinson, board certified. No.
He's board certified, but it's B-O-R-E-D.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to turn this into Love Line, but that would be fun.
Is Bill special guest star like Jonathan Harris?
Yes, he's the head of Locklear of the show. And special
every
guest star.
Every episode, yeah. Special guest star.
And every episode actually was supposed to be and introducing Andrew Leyland. That's in the contract.
And introducing Andrew Leyland as Savick.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. The breakout character of the movie that you really never see again. And let's omit the fact that she was knocked up with Spock's baby. Let's do that.
And that's also in Andy's contract.
That he's knocking up Spock.
No, I get to knock up Spock.
Knocked up with Spock's baby.
It's not time for the Ponfar. We'll come to that when we come to that.
Oh, to bring
deep into black code.
Now I'm just picturing Andy sitting in a bar, like, you know, all drunk and depressed. And, oh, T'Pring, where are you? Why did you leave me?
See, I thought he was about to say, I'll be in my bunk.
Why did you choose Stan over me? It makes no sense!
Stan comes walking into the bar. Drinks for everyone!
You, Stan.
And we bleep those out.
Yeah, we're family friendly on this show.
In a pig's so, eye.
Oh, pig's eye, very good. Very, very good. I like that.
So,
Seth, go on.
Yeah, we're talking about Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Do we have any Star Trek news?
Well, my loot crate, mission crate, hasn't showed up yet.
Well, I'm going to be curious to know what exactly is in there when you get that.
I've only gotten the one of the six I paid for so far.
And what was in that?
There was a Locutus statue from Quantum Mechanics. Enterprise,
it's like literally a statue.
It's vinyl. It's not vinyl, but it's a really yeah. I'll send a picture. It's a pretty decent Locutus.
I would say put it in the Facebook group, but we don't have one.
Yet. There was a Quantum Mechanics Enterprise D, which was kind of nice. Not quite Eagle Moss nice, but a few things are. Mm-hmm. Really nice Borg t-shirt, a badge. So kind of the metal badges you see in Discovery. Quantum Mechanics makes those. They're magnetic. I got my engineering badge. Those are the main things. There are probably a couple of other little things, but off the top of my head. So it looked like a shuttlecraft. The box actually was a shuttlecraft inside and out. So you had, when you opened up the box, you had the seats where they were supposed to be. You had the internal stuff. So they had gotten some goodwill for me because, hey, it's the Galileo. And now I've waited several months.
Galileo
Figaro. And I still haven't seen it. Now, by the time the episode sees release, hopefully I've received the next box, which is Worf-themed, Way of the Warrior-themed.
So we'll this see. Galileo box, is it big enough for a cat to sit in?
Yes.
Is it big enough to put kitty litter in?
and somebody's already put their cat in it, looking like he's piloting the Galileo.
Did the cat put himself in it?
That's a possibility. Cats love boxes.
And the cat's in the loot crate with the silver spoon.
Very good. Piloting Galileo to the moon.
There you go. I knew somebody could pick it up.
Then he thought he was a giant, and he attacked it anyway. And I don't have a crate box now.
Yep. All right. Oh, yes, there is Star Trek news that we almost forgot.
The merger?
Alex Kurtzman signed an overall deal with CBS, which means more Star Trek could be coming, including... The rumor is Patrick Stewart returning as Picard.
No. I only want Patrick Stewart back if the entire cast are back.
That's not going to happen.
I don't know. It's not like
that anybody's
daily routine.
Doing
they're not busy.
No, they're mostly doing Star Trek conventions.
The busiest guy is Wesley
on Big Bang Theory. Yeah. And, well, Patrick Stewart keeps cropping up every now and again doing stuff.
He was the poop voice in Emoji Movie.
Well, that'll be on his CV now and forever. What I would want, and obviously we don't really pay that much attention to what the fans want because they never know what they want, but I actually want something set after Nemesis. Yeah. I'm bored of prequels and reboots. It's not that they're not good. Star Trek Beyond was great. Discovery was pretty good. I want after Nemesis. I want to know what went on after that.
Well, they've got a series of books that are quote-unquote canon, but whether or not they'll adhere to them...
If they brought it back, like as a Netflix miniseries or whatever... like a 3-hour miniseries for the Next Generation with the entire cast, could they bring that back and not negate the book series? Because
Riker's an admiral now, so there would actually
be no problem. Could they bring him back as an admiral? That's no problem. Mm-hmm. 20 it's years on... been since Nemesis.
Right.
It depends. Wasn't there a book where the Borg came back in force and just whipped the shit out of the Federation?
Yes, because doesn't Janeway die in that? Or is that a different book?
I don't know. I'm surprised you didn't say. And there was much rejoicing. Yay!
I was thinking, could they do it like Doctor Who did? When they brought Doctor Who back, they actually said, you know, if you want to think that the novels are canon, they're canon. We're not going to contradict them unless, you know, a specific story does. But it's Doctor Who. You can make it work. It's time travel. Is there any way they could bring the Next Generation back and not negate the books, which is what's pissed off a lot of Star Wars fans? In a way that wouldn't confuse viewers. Is Picard still captain of an Enterprise?
No, he would be he's likely a diplomat or something of that nature.
Right, because I don't know what the books have done post-Nemesis.
Yeah, I don't remember where he's at post-Nemesis. I know where Riker is just because I read a recent book.
Right, I know.
He'd get to Picard from All Good Things, probably.
Right.
See, okay. I don't. I'm trying to think of a way to say this that's diplomatic, pun intended.
Yes.
No, that is not one of the things we do on the show. We do not worry about being diplomatic.
Diplomatic immunity.
But with Star.
Thank you, Bill Ackland.
But with Star Trek, it's never only what's on the screen is canon, and even some of that, including like the animated series, isn't. But it's always been the screen is canon. Everything else is icing on the cake. Right. So if they were bringing it back, I would not make them, if I was in the pilot seat, don't make them beholden to those novels.
Okay, but by the same token, you wouldn't want to bring it back like the original did and everyone's in exactly the same positions on the Enterprise.
No.
Because that's one of my arguments that I've always had. How much better would Star Trek 2 have been if Chekhov hadn't been in Star Trek the Motion Picture? Yeah. He'd already promoted, and then you didn't see him in the motion picture, but in the second one, he's on Reliant.
Yeah, I could have done without his scream in Star Trek the Motion Picture anyway.
And I think sometimes that was the detriment of the original series movies, that they felt they had to shoehorn in Sulu and Chekhov and Uhura when there clearly wasn't a role for them in that story. Mm-mm. So that's, I wouldn't want them to bring the next gen back and they're just all on Enterprise E, and maybe Riker and Troi are off on Titan or wherever they got promoted to at the end of Nemesis. I would want them all to be all over the place, but I wouldn't be averse to Picard still being captain of the Enterprise, but with a semi-different crew. And I did love, I don't know if this is canon in the books or whatever, but I did love the idea that Data being destroyed in Nemesis, instead of being a new Data like before, they just downloaded Data's subroutines into Enterprise. So Brent Spiner would now be the voice of the Enterprise computer.
Yeah, that makes sense since Major Barrett's no longer with us.
And it keeps him in the show without having to explain why Data now looks 50, 60, however old Brent Spiner is.
At the same time, the technology to smooth out people's faces and make them look younger is there.
True. Michael Douglas.
Yeah, perfect example.
Yeah, but I think that's probably too expensive to have to do for every episode of a series that you're going to have him on regularly.
You just limit.
So having him be the computer voice and computer AI is much easier.
Then they're inside Data.
Every once in a while, you could have him become a hologram or something where he appears and you could use that technology.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, true. Yeah, I mean, I know he's also took over running of Discovery, the staff writers from last season having either been fired or stepped away, depending upon which reports you read. So I don't know how that's going to... So 5 episodes of Discovery are apparently in the can before this change happened.
Do we know when Discovery is coming back? Do we have
There has been no word on that yet, but I wouldn't... If they've got 5 episodes in the can now, I would imagine it will probably be around the same time as last year, which was, what, November? End of October?
September, yeah.
Yeah, so I would imagine it'll be around the same time and then have a break for Christmas again.
Well, there's been talk of a CBS Viacom re-merger, which would bring the movies and the TV shows and the licensing all back under one umbrella, because right now I guess it's currently separate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think contractual reasons is why we've not got a continuation from Nemesis, which strikes me as very silly, given they own everything, really. But again, Superboy and Superman are different copyrights, or they were. So, but that's what I want. I'm bored of prequels and rehashes and reboots. I want them to take the story forward.
Let's reel that in a little bit, because you don't want another reboot, rehash, whatever. But, you were very high on Discovery, just like the rest of us. So
yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed Discovery, but having got to the end of it, answer me this question. Why could that not have been 50 years after the last Next Generation movie?
Because then you couldn't have a season this time with Captain Pike in it.
No, but you could have had a season cliffhanger with an Enterprise F. G.
Nobody wants a bloody F, bloody G.
Would that not be more exciting? An Enterprise?
No, we want to see Captain Pike, who can't speak, who if he speaks, everything gets destroyed.
You're so living in the past, dude.
It did not, I totally agree with what you're saying, but it didn't hurt anything to have it be a prequel, as it turns out. And, I do think that from a marketing point of view, it's easier for them to market this.
You think?
Yeah.
That it's set in the same universe as the original, even though it clearly isn't.
I think there's it's easier to get the borderline people to say, oh, let me give this a shot.
Right.
Knowing that you could have crossovers, knowing that you could have Harry Mudd in there, knowing you could have Savick in there. I think it's, and knowing that you can have a crossover with the Enterprise in season 2. Mm-hmm. So I think it, from a marketing point of view, it's easier to get the borderline people.
I've just had a thought. What if the first episode of season 2 is a backdoor pilot and one of these ideas Alex Kurtzman's going to do is a miniseries with Captain Pike?
I'd watch it.
I'm definitely more on board for that as a miniseries, as you say, as opposed to a whole new series.
Yeah. But
as I enjoyed Enterprise, and I did, I think I'm one of the few.
No, I grew to really love Enterprise. Yeah,
but I you know, I think even that would have been better as a maybe a series of miniseries, almost taking the British series way of doing things, and you do a season of, you know, maybe anywhere from 3 to 5 episodes, and that's your season. And you do a story arc for those 5 episodes, and then you come back
in a year,
you know, if it's popular enough, you come back in a year with another miniseries of 5 or so episodes,
because that also, it gives the production crew a job in between Discovery seasons, so it's better for them. It keeps the Star Trek name in the limelight because there's a different show on the air, so that keeps it forefront, but it's not the same, so it's milking the same idea. And it lets the actors go off and do other things. Everybody's happy.
And you know what's really great, Andy? You just did a total 180-degree turn here. A minute ago, you were like, I don't want anything in the past anymore. I'm tired of it. That would be wonderful.
I'm just a massive contradiction. I do want them to carry on. Nothing would have made me happier for the Discovery to be 50 years after Nemesis. If they're going to do shit like that, Captain Pike is a largely unexplored area of Star Trek history. And he's got a fascinating crew just from the cage. He's a fascinating character. His Doctor's an interesting character. The Number One is an interesting character. The Spock of that era is very different to the Spock of the original series. They're all in, you could do so much with that crew.
I'm on board with everything except for Dr. Boyce. I'm not so sure he was old.
I like old country Dr. Sawbones guy. I quite like him. And I like that he's so old as well. I like that. Because what you could do with that is, you halfway through the second miniseries, have him retire and bring in Dr. Piper, who was the doctor in Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Yeah, I'm sitting here nodding. I know you can't hear that, but I'm like, yeah.
I know, I hear the rattling.
And again, in the third season of this mythical Captain Pike show, you see Scotty start as not as chief engineer, but like a second chief engineer or something.
No, you see him come up as like an ensign, and he's getting
getting
hazed and stuff.
Yeah, anything like that. All that would be absolutely brilliant stuff. And actually set a definitive run, like you say, 6 or so episodes. Say, we're only going to do this if it's proper enough. We're only going to do 5 seasons of it. And that way you can actually plan, right, well, in this series we'll bring in Scotty, and in this series you can actually map out all the big things for the full run of the show.
Yeah. That could be fun if of course it's well written enough and, you know, they have production values. I don't think it'll ever happen, but you never know, because if Captain Pike in the second season of Discovery turns out to be enough of a popular character, then they could say, hey, we got to spin off with this thing.
Right. Okay. I am all for potentially Alex Kurtzman doing all of these, but if any of these ideas happen, we want to check.
Yeah, it's residuals.
Yep.
You heard it here first.
At the very least, we want a set invite and an all expenses paid tour, flights, first class accommodation, and
cameos.
Yes, that as well. For all of us.
I would do my cameo much like Pee Wee Herman at the end of Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Paging Mr. P.W. Herman.
I want to be an alien. I want shit tons of latex on me. I want to be I'll be a Klingon.
You just want latex on you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wanted to separate that audio out just on its own.
and that's how I get my closing bumpers.
Yep.
There you go.
The light bulb went off.
Oh, those are some good ideas, though. Why are we not employed by Paramount CBS?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
We're not pretty.
There it is. That's what
speak
I'll take.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, I was going to say, speak for yourself, dude.
I'm
loved with the pretty.
I feel pretty.
I'm too pretty.
Oh, Bill's singing, which means the topic has died.
Hey!
The topic is writhing on the ground and Bill's sticking a knife in it.
All right, okay. Episode then.
Yeah, we've got an episode of Deep Space Nine to talk about.
Which episode is it today?
Let he who is without sin.
All that is ours is yours.
A planet of pure pleasure.
I've got to take you on vacation more often.
A world of total seduction.
Ryza is famous for its diversions.
The ultimate escape has something for everybody. But the perfect paradise...
Stay where you are.
...is about to become Paradise Lost.
The party's over.
Vanessa Williams guest stars on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
This bad boy is the seventh episode of season 5. It is directed by Rene Aubergenois. I just butchered that, didn't I?
No, you did.
This is season 5.
Sorry.
You did it much better than we ever do it.
Written by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolf. And I don't have the air date. Does anybody have the air date in their companion?
November 11th.
On Wikipedia, it's got the original air date as November 11th, 1996.
I know where I was at that. No, okay. Worf's relationship with Dax hits a rough spot, and he plans to discuss his feelings during their vacation on Ryza. We have much to discuss.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I just heard Worf's relationship with Danzaya hits the G-spot. I'm sorry. Begin again.
No, quite all right. I'm keeping that in. But things go from bad to worse when they, along with Bashir, Quark, and Leeta, arrive at the beautiful climate-controlled pleasure planet. Can we just call it the planet? Wait, I may need to cut that one out. That may be too far. Worf
learned... There's no such thing. As long as you have the ability to bleep, there's no such thing as going too far.
Yeah. Well, that'd be funny, much funnier bleeped. Worf learns that the Tempe Lagoons, I can't even say that right, social director, Arandas, played by Vanessa Williams, is the former lover of Curzon Dax. Pascal Fullerton, chairman of the New Essentialists Movement, a group bent on restoring the moral and cultural traditions of the Federation, approaches Worf. Fullerton's goal is to shut down Ryza.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. Worf immerses himself in New Essentialist literature and attends the group's rally. Fullerton makes a speech warning that Ryza's focus on pleasure is just one example of how the citizens of the Federation have become soft and weak. There's a joke I want to make there, but I'm taking the high road. Traits which will render them defenseless if an enemy attacks. Later that night, a group of Essentialists storm the Ryzen Solarium, armed with phaser rifles. Dax realizes that the attack is just a stunt to convince the Ryzen vacationers that they are vulnerable, and that evening, Worf accuses Dax of not taking their relationship seriously, because that's what you do. The next day, Worf sees Dax with Arandas. That's going to make me sound terrible. The next day, Worf sees Dax with Arandas and assumes the worst and is overcome with jealousy. He goes to Fullerton's chambers and announces he knows how to drive the guests from Ryza. I really wanted put in like a Klingon fart would clear them. If you saw the Klingon zit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to sneeze. Soon afterwards, a powerful storm rocks Ryza, putting an end to the resort's outdoor activities. Dax realizes that rain indicates a problem with the planetary weather grid. Fullerton and Worf arrive to reveal that Worf has rigged a tricorder to sabotage the grid. Ryza will experience its normal rainy climate for the next few days. A furious Dax accuses Worf of destroying Ryza because he does not trust her. He reluctantly reveals that his restrained attitude results from a childhood incident. Can you describe the incident, sir? During a school soccer game, when he and a human boy on the other team both made a play for the ball, their heads collided and the boy died. Ever since, Worf has felt obligated to hold back his emotions for fear that he might hurt someone else. Dax begins to understand, but the moment is shattered when a powerful earthquake shakes Ryza. They rush to Fullerton's headquarters, and Worf takes back the doctored tricorder, ending the shaking. And then he reminds Fullerton that trust is also a traditional Federation value. After the weather grid restores the resort's pleasant climate, Worf is ready to enjoy what is left of their vacation now that he has learned to trust Dax. Isn't it great that we're all better people?
But wait, before we get into that, I have a song from a snippet of Bohemian Rhapsody that I'd like to sing in, well, you'll see what it's in memorial to. I'm just a Klingon boy. I need no sympathy because I'm grumpy come grumpy go, little low, really low. Any way the soos blows doesn't really matter to me. Mama just killed a kid, put my head against his head, scored my goal, now he's dead. Mama, his life had just begun, but now I've gone and gold it all away. Mama. That's all I got.
Bravo.
Thank you.
You can't say we don't give you enough bang for your buck.
Andy, do you know what I thought of this episode?
Go on.
It was wild.
Wild, Steve, wild.
Yes.
I can't believe they beat you to that.
No, well, I was waiting for my turn.
Oh, well, I knew I had to get it in earlier. I wasn't going to get it in at all.
Yes, it was delightful to see Monty Markham. Oddly, not scenery chewing, as he normally does.
He was very reserved.
I have to say, I like the scenery chewing Monty Markham.
I love scenery.
I was a little disappointed that he wasn't chewing scenery in this.
I was too, yeah. I was very disappointed he wasn't over the top.
He wasn't?
Especially in the role he was given. You know, you could see where it would be real easy for him to just kind of go nuts with it. Just, you know, as the dissident. But, you know... That whole storyline, while fun to watch, I thought was just a little contrived. Not so much that you have people like them who were, you know, true believers and all of that, but that Worf would go along with it to try and teach Jadzia a lesson. I thought that was not in character for him.
No.
Don't approach Worf in the spaceport and offer him a flower. He'll be, okay, what do I sign up for this? I'm really interested in your religion. Yes, tell me more.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's, I'm going to turn off the weather grid. Why? Spite. You know? It's like, come on.
Because your last lover killed your last host. That's why.
Yeah. Did you guys miss that in this?
No.
That Curzon died by
Kuzu?
Couscous, whatever.
Curzon died on his back.
He went out
the way
happy.
You wanted to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that Jadzia's, well, that's how he would have wanted to die. Be shagged by Vanessa Williams.
Well, who wouldn't?
Yeah, well, she's the big guest star in this, as we mentioned off her. I have no clue who she is, but she's got lovely eyes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, she's just lovely, period. She was actually Miss America and had to abdicate her throne because they found a nude photo shoot that she had done years earlier, which appeared, was that in Penthouse?
Yeah,
yes.
Penthouse. And,
I believe it was issued. Never mind, I'll stop.
I think that was that was like in the 1980s. And it was a different time then, because I think if that happened now, people would say, oh, cool. You know, I don't think there'd be the same outrage that there was then.
Oh, people would probably say, oh, really? Let me Google that.
Yep.
Ooh, I hadn't thought of that.
Oh, and sorry. Probably wouldn't give a shit. Yeah.
Type.
Didn't Bill say that this was ranked as one of the worst, or the worst episode of Deep Space Nine?
Yes. On, no, it was Blaine last time.
Oh, I was going to say.
On the feedback, I think it's an IMDb from the fans, this is ranked as one of the worst episodes ever. Ira, Stephen Burr, and Robert Hewitt Wolf would agree with them, according to The Companion, where they both say that this was the worst episode we ever wrote. Direct quote. They wanted to do an episode that basically showed the hedonism of Ricer, and that would conflate with Monty Markham's opinion and possibly sell the idea better about what he was trying to say and what he was trying to achieve. But standards and practices don't exist in syndication, but they kept being reminded that this show aired in syndication and therefore could air anywhere at any time, be it 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 11 o'clock at night. And this just kept watering down the concept to the point where Worf just comes across as a big old massive fun sponge baby in this one.
He really does.
Yeah, he's just, you've got to wonder why somebody as free spirit and fun loving as Dax is even with him at this point. When they're off to, I mean, you've got Bashir and Leeta shagging anything that moves and generally just enjoying what the planet has to offer, because that's what you're going there for. It's a Club 1830 holiday in Starfleet. You know, there's no need to be down on what they're doing. And they've got this whole Bajoran ceremony where you actually do this to split up with somebody to celebrate the relationship and the moving on, which seems quite mature, I suppose. And then you've got Worf just being this massive stick in the mud. Although, I would have paid good money to see him in those gold lamé shorts.
It chafes.
The whole Bajoran ceremony thing, though, did, I don't know, it seemed a little dumb to me. I guess, you know, the other easier way to break up with your Bajoran lover would be to go to the Kira route and just get him killed.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that always works for Kira.
It just, I don't know, it seemed a little over the top to me, and then that they, you know, they can't tell anybody what they're doing, and I don't know, like, that just seemed a little contrived, I guess. But whatever, it was meant to be a fun episode, clearly, and I think a little bit of that got lost with just some of the silliness that they put into it. I don't think I would put it as, like, the worst episode, like they, you know, as they did, but I didn't think it was a particularly strong episode, to be honest.
I didn't think it was as bad as Move Along Home.
No, that sets new levels.
There it went.
That sets new levels of bad Move Along Home. Because actually, I just fear even saying the name of the title because usually it inspires Andy to just keep yelling that El Marine crap.
El Marine!
See, I don't need to now. I've got everyone well trained. Again, also, what did you think of the Essentialists' plot? Did that make even the remotest bit of sense to go to a place that is built on hedonism and sexual pleasure and complain about it?
You're certainly not playing to your audience.
No, I get what they're saying about the Jem'Hadar, but the Jem'Hadar may go there and just have a good time.
Yeah.
They look like a race that needs a good time.
They end the world all in one swoop.
They'll just stay shrouded all the time. We like to watch.
Well, if that's what they're into, that's having a good time. Well,
they're on the drug addiction side of the planet.
They drug probably go to the part of the planet Tom's.
Yeah, they probably go to the part of the planet where it's raining all the time. Yes. Listen to The Cure, the band, not the episode.
Oh, but if he play Friday We're in Love, that's a jolly song, dude.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, God, have some monster.
I just see a bunch of guys. No, never mind.
See a bunch of Jem'Hadar going, Friday, I'm in love. And then they cast Monty Markham as the bad guy, and you expect him to be scenery chewing and loving every moment of it. And he's kind of flat, which I never thought I would say about Monty Markham.
He comes up a little at the end when he's, you know, he's decided he's going to destroy everything. It's like, okay. Even the guys that are with him are like, hey, dude, we're in the building. You know, I'll bring down this building. Hey, how about we leave first?
I loved his Boolean friend.
Yeah, that's like, the guy's like,
he was absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
Maybe we should get out of the building first before you bring it down.
And look, his face is like, I didn't sign up for this. He's quite funny. I do like the Boolean chum. One of the things that they have said about this is Siddig El-Fadil, Alexander Siddig, was just distracted throughout the entire episode. I don't know if I spotted it in his performance, but this was the episode where Nana Visitor gave birth.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so he wasn't focused on this. He wanted to be off on paternity leave.
You know, I've been trying to figure out why... wait a minute. So, 96. I got to think of when my kids were born.
Again?
I think this... Yeah, I know. I can't remember if it's... I think it is this year. Because I'm trying to figure out why I don't remember a lot of these episodes. I think it's because if this is the same year... Pretty sure this is the year my daughter was born. Late in this month. In November.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be why I don't remember all these... Like, the next one. I'm like, I don't remember this episode.
I didn't remember the next one at all. I barely remember this one, I'll be honest.
Same here. I'm like, I kind of remember this one, but I think I realize now why I was distracted.
Mm. And it's not like this one doesn't have a lot of memorable moments, particularly Jadzia.
Yeah, I'll remember that for a while.
I'm sorry, if you're Worf and you're on holiday with Jadzia and you're bitching and moaning...
Yeah, something's wrong with his priorities.
Yeah, something's very disturbing.
I will turn this shuttlecraft around right now.
Another funny behind-the-scenes tidbit from the companion, Terry Farrell apparently can't go out in the sun. What? So living in California seems a tad strange, but okay. So they had to keep constructing, like, umbrellas and tents, things for her to stand under.
So I guess she burns easy?
Something like that, yeah. Must be. It doesn't say why, it just says Terry Farrell
it may be in the sun. It may have been just because they had to put the spots on her and maybe in the sun.
Because
it may not have been her. It may have been just the situation, you know, the makeup and everything.
Maybe the makeup interacts with the sun?
No, Aubergenois says in The Companion that he'd brought this up many times at production meetings. Terry can't go out in the sun. What are we going to do about that? And apparently they ignored him. So he was trying to allow for it in the budget. And so as it was, they had to keep finding awnings and stuff on set, which was adding to the production time, and the fact that they were shooting on location, which never goes as planned. So there's just lots of little behind-the-scenes tidbits that seem to contribute to this one.
Did you say tidbit?
I was thinking of Lita in that little dressing gown that she's wearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things this episode proved once again, that if they had done a Wonder Woman movie in 1997, here was Wonder Woman.
With Jadzia? With Terry Farrell?
Yeah, Terry Farrell would have been perfect as Wonder Woman in 1997.
Yes, she would have.
Come on, it's not just the look. She's got the eyes, she's got the hair, she's got the height.
The voice.
Yeah. I think she would have been wonderful casting as Wonder Woman back in 1997.
It just opened my eyes because I realized she was a latter-day Linda Carter.
Mm.
She has the same good qualities that made Linda Carter a good Wonder Woman. And I had never connected those two.
Mm. I think she would have been absolutely great. Was there a reason Quark went to Risa with them?
He went to get laid.
I suppose that's a good enough reason to go to Risa.
He was the comic relief, really. It's all he was a punchline generator.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, he didn't really serve a move the plot along purpose, but you know, in that situation, not everybody should, I guess. Otherwise, you know, it just happens we brought along everybody who's going to make this plot more interesting.
Yeah. I'll try to.
Well, let's speaking of the plot, the core of the plot is Jadzia and Worf's relationship. Does that seem a little more wrapped up a little too tightly at the end of this episode?
Yeah, well, it's definitely like we want to have one episode because we've been a little vague about it where we're going to actually define and cement what their relationship is now and for all time. That's what it has the feeling to me. But, you know, some of it seemed a little forced with that.
Mm. Had we heard Worf's soccer story before? Because I swear Next Gen mentioned it at one point, or maybe I just happened to remember this episode.
We didn't hear about it on DS9, definitely.
Yeah.
No, it's new to this episode, and I actually thought that's a lot of baggage to lay on him, that he killed a child.
With his forehead ridge.
Yeah, it's like the battle attached
to my head.
I get what they're going for, that there's a reason Worf is so completely different from all the other Klingons. They're all, you know, drink, wine, women, song, fight, and Worf's very stoic by comparison. And I get that they wanted to go for an explanation for, well, he was raised by humans and he's always had to rein himself in because of that, and that's now just his default nature. But to lay the death of a child on him, that's heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But I didn't have a problem with that. It just, you know, the actual background story I thought was kind of compelling. Just the way we got to have to hear it just seemed like, you know, we've gone this long. So, you know, you're talking about carrying the baggage of that. I think that's huge baggage. And for us now, we know Worf for, 9 years at this point? And this is the first time we're getting any inkling that it happened, even though we've had, his adoptive parents on the show. We've had a lot of Worf-centric episodes. It just seems like, that's an awful major personality or life event for us to never have heard anything about before.
Mm. And also to stick into such a frivolous episode.
So it was not a bad plot point. I just don't think it was necessarily brought out in the most elegant of ways.
Mm. Or in the best place. This should have been a light, sexy romp, maybe with a bit of an action adventure story, a little bit more like Captain's Holiday.
Love DS9 style.
Yeah, yeah. That kind of thing. And to have Worf be a giant stick in the mud all the way through the episode and then lay this heavy guilt trip on him, it kind of was at odds with what the episode was trying to be.
But then you throw in the Monty Markham plot to try and to make it, you know, meaningful somehow that, oh, look, they're all too complacent and, you know, whatever.
Mm. Yeah, he just came across as somebody who doesn't want anyone to have any fun. And I don't think it's awful. I don't think it's as bad as the worst Deep Space Nine gets because, let's be honest, Terry Farrell's brilliant in it and she's just eminently watchable. Armin Shimerman's always gold, even when he's just playing light comedy relief. The location photography's pretty. René Auberjonois does a good job with the direction. It's a very light, fluffy 44 minutes. It's not heavy, apart from the Worf reveal. It whiles away the time perfectly fine. I wasn't bored by it like I've been with some other episodes, but it's just kind of meh, isn't it?
Yeah.
I watched this one while I was on the treadmill, and it didn't make the treadmill time go faster. I like the episodes where if I'm doing a half an hour on the treadmill, I get to the end of my half an hour and think, well, there's only 12 minutes left in this episode. I'm going to stay on. This was not one.
Mm. And for an episode about the sexy planet, the original show was far sexier than this.
Oh, yeah.
Where did they film this at? Do you guys have that?
It doesn't say in the companion. Well, let me have a speed read.
Speed read. Speed. Oh.
I'm thinking that's where you put in the Benny Hill music.
There you go.
Malibu. Malibu Beach.
Ah.
So I think they thought this might be more popular than it was as an episode, because we have to end off with almost like, you know, with Vanessa Williams, like, oh, come back and see us again. Oh, we might do that. You know?
Y'all come back now, you hear?
Oh. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Or maybe they thought they were going to have a spin-off show and it would be kind of like the Star Trek Fantasy Island.
The shuttle!
We could have Morn. Morn could be tattooed.
Oh, Morn had a great... probably the best part of the episode was Morn coming down the steps with that flower.
Oh, yeah, and he gives it to random Starfleet woman.
At the beginning, the opening scene where Worf just pissed off that Jadzia talks to her friends was really funny.
He has a clear skull.
Ew. And, you know, I really like that.
And Jadzia being treated for intimate relations.
Yeah.
Because it causes so much injury. Interspecies romance is a risk. Yeah, it is.
Especially, oh, never mind. I was going to mention something from that we discovered from watching Discovery. But
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh. Oh.
That's ribbed for your pleasure.
Oh, double mint fun.
Double your pleasure, double your fun.
Yep. Okay. All right, well, have we exhausted this one then?
I don't think there's a heck of a lot to say about it.
No, that's
this
what I was worried about. I'm like, we kind of spread it as thin as we possibly could.
Yeah, okay.
Should we rate it?
Oh, just one last thought is that there should be like all sorts of fail safes to keep them from screwing with the weather grid.
Well, that's
they got to buy it a little too quickly.
Why does Worf completely get away with this?
Yeah, it's yet another time where somebody of our main crew should be tossed in the brig after it's done. And we just, you know, instead we'll just play and it goes on and we move on.
Yeah, it's another example of him interfering and he shouldn't have done.
And he gets to swim nude with Jadzia at the end.
I won't know. I won't tell if you won't.
Now I guess we can rate. Mm. Or no, we rate first, and then we get on to
the later. I'll go first. 2.5 is middle of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would put this at a 2. It's not quite average, but it's not terrible. I mean, I was expecting a much, much worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement, too. It's a Baywatch episode of Star Trek. It's perfectly entertaining eye candy. The locations are nice. That's distracting. The bathing suits are nice. That's distracting. There's some pleasing performances by the regulars, but it's not, you know, it's just kind of there. It's the literal definition of moving wallpaper.
See, I'm also at a 2, but I almost feel like you guys gave a kind 2, and I want to give a mean 2.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I want to say it's a 2 because it was just not that good. You guys are saying, well, it was okay. I'll give it a 2. I want to just be a little bit more nasty about my 2. I want to give it a 2 and then spit on it.
All right. Well, we're giving it a 2 in the sense that we were expecting it to be much worse than this, and it wasn't as bad as we were expecting it, but it's still a 2. It's a 2.
I'm giving it a 2 and saying the only reason it's a 2 and not a 1 is because Monty Markham is in it.
Okay, I'll go with that. The only reason it's a 2 and not a 1 is that Jerry Farrell's in it in a bikini.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, that knocks it. Actually, I'll give it 0.5 for each of those. So that bumps it from a 1 to a 2.
I'm sorry, female listeners, we are being a bit sausage-fest. I do apologize.
Yeah, when you get to my rating.
Go ahead, Bill.
Give it 2 smuggled hands inside a bathing suit.
Oh, have you got your hand in the promised land?
Those aren't pillows. Oh, sorry. I'll give it a 2 just because of the Armin Shimerman, just that the actors kind of bring it up a little bit with the guest star with the bathing suits.
You turn into Bill Cosby with the guest star with the baby.
Color film and the zuba zuba.
Bill Cosby would be on Riser, but he would never mind. I'm not going to go there.
Bill Cosby on Riser is no. That's just a potential for disaster.
Anyways, so that's the episode, but what does Blaine have to say about it? We haven't had a musical intro yet.
Blaine says, it's time for the email. What's he think about this now? I can't stretch this out anymore. Get the email up.
We really do need to get a drop that we could put in there instead of having to have Bill.
Drop!
Oh, sorry, those Beastie Boys.
So, Blaine says, hi, guys.
What? What is, you're like a giggle machine today. What is,
because you're being uncharacteristically funny.
Hey!
And you know what? Take that uncharacteristic part into account. Keep that in mind.
You're on fire today, Bill. On fire!
It's wild. So Blaine says, hi guys. As far as IMDb voters are concerned, this is the worst episode of the series, rated 5.4 out of 10. I think that's unfair. It's fair to say it could have been better, but I'd rather head to Raining Riser than Move Along Home any day. I suspect the votes were a low because it's following the episode that is the second strongest of the series. Again, as far as IMDb users are concerned, Memory Alpha has a lot of information about the people behind the series who would have preferred to come back and tweak it in a lot of ways. Much of the comic relief works. And then in parentheses, he said, I better go find Dr. Bashir. He brought a Horgun down to breakfast, and that's the last I saw of him.
Yeah, that there. Yeah, funny line. Funny gag.
Sure, it may be hard to understand Worf's restraint and Jadzia Dax enticing him. His willingness to disable the weather controls and leave that control behind are a little tough to accept, and there had to be laws against it. Still, the idea of a pundit convincing people to go back to traditional values resonates pretty much any place at any time. There are elements of greatness here, but it feels like the focus was off, perhaps by the effort that went into last week's episode. I'm going to disagree with the elements of greatness. I think that, you know, there was potential to make more out of this episode, but I think greatness is probably a little hyperbolic.
You and your big words. No, we did kind of touch on Worf not getting any repercussions as a Starfleet officer.
Yeah, you're an officer, so you could just do whatever you want. That's the way the episode treated it. He's the highest, I guess, the highest ranking officer from Starfleet on the planet, so he just has free reign to do whatever he wants. And I didn't mean free reign as a pun.
Wait a minute, did you say hyperbolic? I thought you said high colonic. Never mind.
It's wild, Bill. Wild.
Well, I don't know if I want to go to a wild high colonic party. Never mind. No. All I could do with a good colon cleansing.
And the episode's come to a screeching halt.
Yep.
It stays there. Yeah.
Okay, having listened to what Blaine has to say, we will have a look at Father Kors, which is from Ben, but the actual signature is TSM, the Spatula Messiah. He's not the Messiah.
Every naughty boy.
It's the rest of gag here. Paul, Andy, Bill. So now I'm caught up. And Dave. Let's add Dave to that now, should we? So now I'm caught up and was hoping to be able to do so in time for Father Kors. Unfortunately, I don't know if I have much to say since you covered all of it so well. I love Mackie episodes and could watch Sisko and Eddington monologuing at each other all day. There really aren't very many Mackie episodes of Deep Space Nine, but pretty much of them, they are all favourites. Glad you had fun with this one too. So I guess I'll complain a bit about Zayal, or rather the whole principle of having multiple Zayals. I guess, unlike you guys, I really got a kick out of the character as played by Saya Batten in Indiscretion, and especially Return to Grace. She was wise beyond her years, yet still so young and exuberant about Dukat's grand story in a way that Kira obviously finds heartbreaking, and it's instantly plausible that she sees a version of herself that she can maybe guide away from a few of her own mistakes. I knew right away there was something off when I first watched Father Kors. I like Tracy Middendorf pretty well as an actor, but it's just not the same. And by the time we get to Zayal number 3, she's effectively a totally different, less interesting character who happens to have the same name and background as the Spitfire we, okay, just me I guess, fell in love with in Return to Grace. I got to respect the writers a lot from reading the DS9 companion, but got angry when one of them spun some lame line about it being some artistic layer of artificiality and metadrama or some such nonsense to constantly having a different actor playing the character. One would think that such smart TV people would realise that if you take away all the great things that one actor brings to the role, it becomes a different role. That's an exceptionally good point, given what's happening with Roseanne and Lethal Weapon and everything else on television at the minute. How much does an actor bring to a part? When has recasting a role ever really worked in long-form drama? Has it ever really worked?
Long-form drama? Because I can think of recastings in comedy shows, but...
See, in comedy, you can kind of do a nod and a wink, like to go back to Roseanne. The Beckys, they made a joke of the fact that they had different actors playing Becky. And that kind of worked, because it was like the audience were like, yeah, it was a different Becky, and the producers were like, we know you know it's a different Becky, let's just go with it, should we? But you can't really do that in drama.
I think the most obvious comedy one is in Bewitched with the two Darren Stevenses.
But you may not even notice that one.
In drama, I think more often they're better off when they replace the character instead of recasting him, which is like what they did several times on NYPD Blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and no one remembers now that Mission Impossible didn't have Peter Graves in the first season.
I don't remember that.
Or that John Steed wasn't the lead character in the first season of The Avengers. No one remembers that. So it's... I suppose it is case by case. It didn't work in Alias Smith and Jones.
Oh no, it was terrible.
I can't imagine. Did it work on Dallas when they replayed Miss Ellie multiple times?
But she wasn't really a major character, was she? I mean, I was never a Dallas fan, so I can't really speak to it.
She was pretty.
But
major.
I thought she was more of just a.
I don't remember.
You know, a small part on the series.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, they replaced Barbara Bel Geddes with Donna Reed, and then brought Barbara Bel Geddes back.
Oh, maybe that's why I. Okay.
So I'm struggling to think of a drama series where they've pulled it off. They can do. Well, they've done it in soap. They've done it in soap operas. They've pulled it off in comedy. It's like NYPD Blue pulled it off, but they changed the character.
Mm-hmm. They just rotated
Eventually, like it started off as whatever. I don't remember what David Caruso's character's name was, but he and Sipowicz were, you know, the two stars of the show, and eventually it became Sipowicz and whoever his partner is.
Jimmy Smits.
But Rick Jimmy Schroeder. Smits.
Even what's his name from Saved by the Bell?
Yeah, Mark Bar Gossler.
Yeah,
and then Law and Order does that too. They're, you know, they just rotate new part. You know, like Law and Order SVU. But yeah, and they're not keeping Spartacus, the same character.
In Spartacus, they had to change Spartacus, but they had no choice. The lead actor died.
Right.
And you can't not do Spartacus without Spartacus.
Oh, well.
Not that it's a major character, but on Game of Thrones, the Mountain's been played by like five different guys.
Yeah, but. Mm. Yeah. Oh, Doctor Who.
Yeah, but in Doctor Who, it's
but that's, built. Yeah, that's written into the why they explained why they can change him. Yeah. So, which was great.
I mean, the first time that Patrick Troughton did it was probably a big risk. After mm-hmm. Patrick Troughton did it, it's just accepted as part of the show.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm struggling because I think Ben's right.
I guess we don't count reboots because, like,
no.
Hawaii Five-0, I've watched some of those. They redid the whole show.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see whether this new guy can be Thomas Magnum.
Spoiler, because, he can't.
There you go.
See, he's not Tom Selleck.
So at what point is the actor... has brought so much to that role that it's inconceivable another actor can play them.
Maybe while
Sean Connery. Yeah, Sean Connery has been superseded many times as James Bond. There are still people who think he was the best.
Nobody does it better. Wait.
Daniel Craig does.
Oh, yeah.
For now.
So, yeah. So I don't know. I think Ben's got a point that a good actor brings something to the role that makes it difficult to replace if you just recast the role. But I kind of think they're a bit stuck with Zayal. They can't change the character because that's the daughter. So maybe they shouldn't have just brought her back? I don't know.
I mean, you always do some weird in-story continuity that, oh, when Cardassians age, they, you know, their facial structure changes very drastically from youth to age, you know, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, perhaps they thought under the Cardassian makeup they could get away with it.
Yeah.
See, I didn't think she, on her own, was a significant enough character to really...
To be honest,
care that they recast it. I think she's more of a plot device than she is a character in my mind.
Until you guys brought it to my attention, and it's been mentioned on the show, I never knew there was different actresses that played Zial. That I just didn't remember. I think because I had so many other things going on in my life, I just didn't catch. Mm-hmm. And maybe, like you said, it's because of the makeup. I never knew there was a different actress that played her.
Yeah, I mean, the example I can think of that both proves the rule and is the exception to the rule is Blake Seven, where in between the first and second season, they recast the bad guy, Travis, and the second guy is nowhere near as good as the first guy. The first guy's quite a suave and sophisticated James Bond-type bad guy, and the second one's a Cockney thug. So killing him off became the only thing they could do. But 50% of that show is done without Blake. Blake isn't even in season 3 and 4. So it's recasting didn't work. And then when the actor left the show, they just didn't replace it.
And there you go.
Yeah, Ben's email concludes, by the way, for Blaine Say's song, wouldn't Jane Say's by Jane's Addiction be the more obvious choice? I thought that's what Bill was doing.
No, I think in the past I have. Blaine Says.
I mean, I'm not saying that Perry Farrell's got a better email. Thing to do, but, you know.
What are we doing next time?
Next time, our all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. We're looking to things past.
A bizarre accident.
Medical emergency.
Their conscious minds are still active.
Traps the crew between realities.
Not who we seem to be.
Frozen in time.
We need to find out who we are in this reality.
Pawns in a dangerous game.
But none of this makes any sense.
Their only hope of escape.
Please, listen to me!
Is buried deep in Odo's past. On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
as the crew of Deep Space Nine quantum leap to other people.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Oh, boy.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
What was that?
So
what
was what? Sounded like somebody was scratching a turntable.
And no, it was probably me scratching a turntable.
Ah.
Here comes the art step.
I was going to put a fat beat down.
You're going to drop the bass only
I'm
one
right
time.
I'm right here, dude.
Lyrical gangster. Hey there, Mr. Officer. Don't get me like that.
Hey, we can do this whole song. Each of us just takes one.